Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting a video streaming live from our studios, New York City. Today, we're going to begin by taking a look at a very unusual way for men to lower their prostate cancer risk, according to a new study from Cancer Epidemiology. And milk may increase your risk of fractures and overall death in both men and women. Could a Japanese mushroom extract eradicate human papillomavirus? Black tea and citrus, all citrus, can lower ovarian cancer risk. And a diet high in fruits and vegetables and whole grains and nuts are among factors to lower the first-time risk of stroke from the Mayo Clinic. And scientists identify a key factor in the relationship between diet, inflammation, and cancer. And if you know someone who has asthma, breathe easier with vitamin D and a lot more on health and healing. From our environmental segment today, we're going to take a look at birds in trouble all over the world from Alanda Mitchell from Environmental Health News. A very interesting study since most people don't observe bird behavior. Also today, a commentary that I would like your feedback on. This is from Michael Parente from Global Research. A terrible normality. How we just accept massacres in our history without challenge. Also today, for those of you who have been asking me about what do I believe, what do I anticipate our economy doing, I'm going to give you the latest on our economies. There is no one economy. And include in it a brand new study from Harvard and why it's not what is happening here that matters. It is what's happening in China. This will really surprise you, especially those of you who have a background in finance or business. Also today, we're going to play several segments of what happens when you're poor in America. Last evening on my Progressive Commentary show, a program, Kids for Cash, it focused upon an award-winning documentarian. In fact, he also produced Errol Morris's Fog of War, which won the Academy Award. And he had on one of the victims, one of the women who went to jail, for doing nothing. She had done nothing that anyone would consider offensive, let alone punishable by jail. But it turns out the judge that sent her in this small Pennsylvania town had sent 3,000 other young kids to jail, to prison. And some were in there for as long as 4 years, one for jumping over a desk in school. You know, just a desk, you jump over it, and suddenly you go to jail. Someone was spitting, you go to jail. One young lady, she was late for class on several occasions, she went to jail. So it didn't matter what offense you had, you went to jail. Now, as it turns out, this judge just happened to have received secretly $2.5 million from the builder of the jail. So, and yet my challenge was not to the judge, because he's now spending 28 years in prison, and the chief judge along with him. My challenge was to, throughout the documentary, parents, school teachers, administrators, police, everyone believed it was a great idea what this judge was doing. Zero tolerance. And I thought, zero tolerance. Unless, of course, it's their kid that is jaywalking and now will spend 2 years in jail. And I'm seeing this everywhere. But you have to look back at everything that's been occurring and then look at everything now. For example, the militarization of our police, where just this week, 26 fully armed SWAT team men raided a man's home, 76-year-old man, because he owed a bill. That's all. He was late on making a payment. So today, the answer if you don't pay your bill is 26-member fully armed SWAT team. 80,000 SWAT team raids last year. We are also seeing zero tolerance for any behavior that would be considered normal by police in giving them summonses. A walking against a light. For example, you're standing on a corner and you look left and right. There are no cars coming. You're in the lane, so you walk. All right? You get stopped, and you could get a ticket, or you get arrested. But it's where people do it. Are they arresting people on Wall Street for doing this? No. And stop and search. And it becomes the new normal. But also, criminalizing being poor is the new normal. I'm going to play you something you have not heard or seen. The way that they're taking people in small communities throughout the United States, and if they're late on a bill, any bill, it doesn't matter what the bill, they not only go to jail, but they are given a fine, and then they're turned over to a private prison system with its own private court and private probation officers, and you have to pay. Now, let's say the ticket for having a broken headlight was $41, but the fine and the fees to the private court is $145. So you pay what you can, but you can't pay at all. So the next month, the amount you pay never goes against the ticket. It goes against the fees. And then you have to see a probation officer, because you had a ticket for a light that was out. And every month, they add on more money. One woman, as you will see, within a year, she paid $450 for fees to the probation officer, and not a penny went against her original ticket. And oh, another woman, this will really grab you. This woman paid her fine, paid all the fees, was on probation for 4 years, finished her probation, paid for that, and then 5 years later, she was arrested for 20 days, charged $2,000 for being in that private jail for 20 days, even though she had finished her probation. Did the court side with her? No. Did the judges with her? No. Who are these people? How are they getting away with it? Is it a few people, a few thousand people, a few hundred thousand people? It's millions. No, it's not. It's tens of millions of people. But if you live on the Upper West Side, the Upper East Side, the nice part of Brooklyn, none of this relates to you. But I live in the rest of the world, and it sure as hell relates to where I go and film. So I'm gonna put this up today because we need to start paying attention to what they're doing to the homeless in America. When we have degenerated to such a low and gross level that the average citizen doesn't give a damn about anyone but themselves, and we allow laws that go against everything that is both reasonable and rational, then we're the problem, not the police. What do you expect from the police or the judges or the attorney general? What do you really expect from these people? Reasonableness? You're not going to get it. Then why aren't we doing anything? That's part of our program today. Oh, and by the way, the U.S. poverty remains the highest in the developed world in the United States for children. I'll get to that as well. Let's begin. First up, milk. We've been told milk's good, creates strong bones. Not true. The British Medical Journal, the current issue, has an interesting article. A diet rich in dairy products, particularly milk, quote, is promoted to reduce the likelihood of osteoporotic fractures. However, a new study suggests that a high intake of milk is associated with a higher risk of fractures and higher rate of death in men and women. Mind you, I'm quoting exactly verbatim from the British Medical Journal. It goes on to say that The researchers hypothesized that a high consumption of milk may, in fact, increase oxidative stress, leading to an effect on the risk of mortality and bone fracture. And this was a part of a large study, and it's all having to do with galactose. Now, any dietitian or nutritionist knows that galactose is a simple sugar. It's called D-galactose, and it makes up half of lactose, the sugar found in milk. Well, experimental evidence in various animal species indicates that a chronic exposure to D-galactose is detrimental to health. It's a source of aging and shortening of lifespan. Quote, the consequences are due to oxidative stress damage, chronic inflammation, neurodegeneration, decreased immune response, and gene transcriptional changes. And then they tested this and found out it was correct. So, probably the most devastating report yet talks about tracking women in the Swedish mammography cohort study for 20 years, and 3 glasses or more of milk a day could lead to an increased risk of death, and a substantial increase. The same was also true of men. Quote, our results question the validity of recommendations to consume high amounts of milk to prevent fragile fractures. You bet. Now, good research out of the University of Texas Health Science Center and in Houston showed that an extract of the Japanese shiitake mushroom has the potential to eradicate human papillomavirus, which is the leading cause of cervical cancer. The principal investigator, Judith Smith, professor in the Department of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Science, University, presented the team's findings at the 11th International Congress on Integrative Oncology. Now, we know that the human papillomavirus infections are the most commonly transmitted sexually infections in the U.S., and the orthodox treatment is not successful, but most of it clears itself out of the body. But in this case, they used an extract of the shiitake mushrooms, an active hexose compound called AHCC, and it was extremely successful at killing the human papillomavirus. So that's terrific. So shiitake mushrooms in your diet, and we'll see about that extract. A good study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, done at the University of East Anglia, that's in the United Kingdom, it's, 3 or 4 hours from London, showed that if you consume black tea and citrus, you could lower your risk of ovarian cancer. Quote, from the study, good news for women who like to drink their daily cup of black tea or orange juice. A new study suggests that consuming foods containing flavanols and flavanones, subclasses of dietary flavonoids found in tea and citrus fruits and juices, is linked to a decreased risk of developing epithelial ovarian cancer, the 5th cause of cancer among women. Quote, plants contain flavonoids that adjust key cellular signaling pathways and regulate cancer inflammation pathways. And just a couple of cups of black tea a day was a link to 31% reduction in the risk of ovarian cancer. They studied 171,940 women as part of the Nurses' Health Study and Nurses' Health Study 2 over the course of 30 years, to find out how powerful flavonoids were on ovarian cancer. Quote, this is the first large-scale study looking into whether habitual intake of different flavonoids can reduce the risk of epithelial cancer. And it did. Now, here's the good news for all the people listening to this program and have followed the advice. The more of the citrus that you eat, the full citrus family, the lower your risk of cancer. But if you juice it, you're going to be even better. Now, it may be a little tart, and you can, in which case you can sweeten it up with maybe a little stevia or maybe a little manuka honey. But if you use the skin, and we're talking about organic oranges, lemons, limes, grapefruit, and kumquats, which are small, very potent You wash the skin, then you juice the whole thing because most of the flavonoids, most of the flavanols, most of the healing agents are in the white pulp that most people don't eat and in the skin. There are known anti-cancer oils in the skin of grapefruit, lemon, lime, and oranges. In fact, so potent are these oils that the woman, the first person to invent this in the United States, she retired from the Los Angeles Police Department. She came to see me in New York years ago, and she said, "What do you think of this?" And she showed me the science that she had put together, and I said, "This is very impressive." She said, and it was surreptitious how this came about. She didn't do it through any university. She did it on her own, where she tried using some oils to keep mosquitoes and bugs away, and she found that it worked. And then she thought, all right, well, there's candles, but there's some toxins in the candles. I don't want to use that to keep mosquitoes away. What if I was able to get some of the oils? And then she figured out that the strongest oils are not in the flesh, it's in the skin. So she got the oils out of the skin of lemons and oranges, and then she used this very primitive way of vaporizing it so that the whole room smelled like oranges or lemons. And she said it was terrific at cleaning up the air in there, and it also prevented the mosquitoes. So then I suggested, and she went ahead, and she bottled this stuff. And so anytime you go into a store and you see one of those little air misters that are citrus, that's her invention. And good for her. But the idea was, it's not the flesh that's cleaning up the air. And also it kills bacteria, it kills viruses. So a school teacher, if you wanted to help clean up your room and prevent or lower the risk of a lot of infectious illnesses, just walk around when the class is out with one of those air therapies, like an orange or citrus, and spray it in the air. Held your arm above, high in the air with the can, and just about every 5 seconds, spray, up and down the aisles. And that hangs in the air, and that kills airborne bacteria and viruses. And it's good. It really is great. And you should always have one in your bathroom because it kills bacteria that is emanating. Remember, every time you flush a toilet, and if the lid is up, you just cause the toilet to sneeze. And that spreads the bacteria. One single bowel movement will create almost 500,000 bacteria and about 30,000 viruses. Always put the lid down and spray, and then it doesn't happen. So get your fruit, get your citrus, juice it, or powder. Powder is the most powerful, most concentrated. Second would be the juicing. Third would be to eat the fruit. And they were just eating the fruit and got 31%. Imagine if they were getting more concentrated amounts of fruits in their diet. Finally, from the Mayo Clinic, eating the Mediterranean diet regularly, also in engaging in physical activity, and keeping your blood pressure under control can lower your risk of first-time stroke. It's according to the American Heart Association journal, Stroke, quote, "We have a huge opportunity to improve how we prevent new strokes because risk factors that can be changed or controlled, especially high blood pressure, account for 90% of the strokes." That's according to Professor Mishka, lead author of the report and chairman of neurology at the Mayo Clinic. You bet. We agree. In fact, last evening, I had an opportunity to do 3 lectures. It was a long evening. And I lectured also before our health support group, which is doing phenomenally. One woman's lost over 40 pounds in 8 weeks. But the blood pressure, blood sugars are coming down. Energy's increasing in the participants. Clarity of thought, better sleep. Just a whole lot of great improvements. So it works. And finally, this is from the peer-reviewed journal Cancer Epidemiology. This is research that under the oncology cancer division, and this was done at the Prostate Cancer and Environmental Study in Montreal. Listen to this. Quote, around 1 in 7 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer in their lifetimes, but a new study, which is likely to be welcomed by many men, claims that having more than 20 female sexual partners may significantly reduce your risk of developing prostate cancer. Okay. Well, let's be optimistic. If 20 reduces it, how about 40 preventing it? Love that study. Okay. I could just hear someone say, damn. I'm Gary Nall. Let's take a look at our environmental issues. This is from Alana Mitchell, and it's about the birds. I'll just quote a few sentences here. The ice of Antarctica doesn't faze birds, nor does the heat of the tropics. They thrive in desert, swamps, open ocean, or sheer rock faces, on treeless tundra atop airless mountaintops and burrowed into barren soil. Some fly nonstop for days on end, with just the feathers on their backs. They crisscross the hemisphere, dodging hurricanes and predators along the way, pinpointing scarce food and tracking down safe resting places, arriving unerringly at a precise spot year after year. Sole descendants of the dinosaurs, birds have penetrated nearly every ecosystem on Earth and then tailored their own size, habits, and colors to each one, pollinating, dispersing seeds, controlling bugs, cleaning up, carrion, and fertilizing plants, all the while singing notes so beguiling that hearing them makes even the urban dweller pause and listen. Birds are the planet's superheroes, built for survival, but for all their superhuman powers, they're in trouble. Globally, 1 in 8, more than 1,300 species of birds are threatened with extinction, and the status of most of those is deteriorating, according to BirdLife International, and many others are in worrying decline, from the tropics to the poles. Quote, if birds are having issues, you have to think about whether humans are going to have issues too, said an ornithologist with the National Audubon Society and based at the International Center in Massachusetts. In North America, in our breadbasket, populations of grassland birds such as sweet-trilling meadowlarks are in freefall, along with those everywhere else on the planet. Graceful flyers like swifts and swallows that snap up insects on the wing are showing widespread declines in Europe and North America. Eagles, vultures, and even raptors are on the wing throughout Africa. Colonies of seabirds such as murreys and puffins on the North Atlantic are vanishing, and so are shorebirds, including red knots in the Western Hemisphere, sandpipers, spoonbills, pelicans, and storks, among the migratory birds dependent upon the intertidal flats of Asia's Yellow Sea, are all under a threat. Australian South American parrots are struggling, and some of the iconic penguins of Antarctica face starvation. And while birds sing, they also speak. Many of their declines are driven by the loss of places to live and breed. Their marshes, rivers, forests, and plains are by diminished food supply. But more and more these days, the birds are telling us about new threats to the environment and potentially human health in the coded language of biochemistry. Through analysis of the inner workings of the bird cells, scientists have been deciphering increasingly urgent signals from ecosystems around the world. Like the fabled canaries that miners once thrust into coal mines to check for poisonous gases, birds provide the starkest clues in the animal kingdom about whether humans, too, may be harmed by toxic substances, and they prophesy what might happen to us as the load of carbon-based planet-warming gases in the atmosphere and oceans climbs ever higher. Rachel Carson was the earliest and best-known scientist to link the fate of birds to that of the humans. Alerted by reports of sharp declines in birds of prey and songbirds, she began to examine the effects of the pesticide DDT. It was the first modern synthetic pesticide in wide use after World War II to control mosquitoes and other insects. Her book, Silent Spring, published in 1962, the title echoes the poet John Keats' celebrated line, "And no birds sing," explained that DDT moved up through the food chains from the insects it was designed to kill to the creatures that ate them. It accumulated in their tissues, organs, and fat in top predators such as the falcons, osprey, bald eagles, pelicans. Quote, over increasingly large areas of the United States, spring now comes unheralded by the return of the birds, and the early mornings are staggeringly silent where once they were filled with the beauty of bird song. But it wasn't just the birds. Carlson reasoned that if DDT could accumulate in birds, it could accumulate in humans also. She said, quote, we have subjected enormous numbers of people to contact with these poisons without their consent and without their knowledge. By 1972, after public uproar, DDT was banned in the United States and eventually banned around the world, except in malaria-prone countries, mostly in Africa. Yet DDT's legacy remains. Traces of the persistent pesticide classified as probable carcinogens are still found in most people around the world today and in the land and water they depend upon. And again, it's birds that are telling us this tale. A recent study reported that birds of prey in South Carolina still carry as much DDT and other legacy pesticides in their bodies as they did before such chemicals were banned in 1970. Quote, suggesting exposure has not declined substantially over the past 40 years. In the town of St. Louis, Michigan, near an old chemical plant, robins are still dropping dead of DDT poisoning, registering some of the highest levels ever recorded in wild birds. The idea that birds tell us all about our health has gained even more scientific traction in the decades since Silent Spring, as biochemical analysis has become more precise. Much of that work stemming from studies conducted on the Great Lakes. So, pay attention. The birds are dying. Whole species are going extinct. And they are toxic, just like the honeybees are dying. Pesticides, neonicotinoids. And we have thousands of these chemicals in our environment. And because of lobbying and politics, they are not being taken out. And if we have the Trans-Pacific Partnership or the North Atlantic Partnership treaties passed, you will never again see any chemical ever banned in the United States, no matter how toxic it is. That's the reality. That's why we cannot compromise at all on this. That's our environmental segment. And now we're going to take a brief break and come back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. And I want to thank you for taking the articles, the latest article that Richard Gale and myself have written on GMOs, the new walking dead. It's a major article. For those of you who want to see why GMOs are dangerous, all the lies of the pro-GMO forces, it details everything. It was just posted yesterday. You can look at it on any of our websites, and it's being sent throughout the whole world on different websites. So pass it along. It helps us in our challenge to GMOs and labeling them as well. Still coming, we're going to hear from some communities where if you don't pay a bill, you can go to jail, and they can keep you there. These are private jails, private courts, private police, all privatized, and it's rampant. One single court in one single community down in Georgia is overseeing 30,000 individuals whose only crime was they were poor, couldn't pay bills, and now they're all part of that system, and they have that on their record. We're going to bring that too. And we're also going to give you the latest on this Harvard study, and I'm going to, in a moment, talk about our exceptionalism the part we don't want to acknowledge. Just a couple of program announcements. First, because we were simply packed, standing room only, for the workshop that I did last Saturday to help people who wanted to network with other people to help them what they should be doing if there is a solar storm so that they would have an opportunity to survive and thrive. We had no room for over 600 people. So I'm going to do one more, and this is it, this Saturday at noon. It's free. It's a public service. Surviving a solar storm. You can call our number at 646-926-5422 if you'd like to come. Also, I'll be interviewing segment producers. Little background here. One of the most joyful times I personally have ever had in my entire radio career was when I was doing my noon show was on BAI, but my evening show for 3 years until they sold it to an all-religious station was on WMCA in the mid-1990s. And I was doing a two-hour night show from 8 to 10 o'clock. Then Alan Combs came on 10 to midnight, and then Barry Farber, midnight overnight. And it was, and what I did, instead of having one producer, I had one producer per hour. So I ended up having like 12, with a rerun on Sunday, I had 12 producers, and each one would just focus on producing 1 hour per week. It was the best radio I could have ever imagined because people were really excited about what they were doing. So I'm going to try something like that again for a couple of shows a week. So if you'd like to be interviewed for being a segment producer, just give a call at the same number and we'll see about it. Talking with you. And then also, very important, normally when I premiere a new documentary, which I've been doing once or twice a year for a long time, I generally have one showing. But because I'm doing this as a fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI in New York, I'm doing 35 showings. As of today, with only two mentions, half are all book solid. So these will all be completely full, and which will be good for the station. But if you want to join me, because I'll be there each evening, I won't be there in the daytime, because I can run downtown, then I got to run back uptown. And at night, there are two showings, one at 7:10, and then 9:30. And I'll be doing a talk with people from the movies themselves in that. You've got to call and make a reservation. You're getting two copies of the film and a book and watching the film all for $30. And it is a fundraiser for WBAI. So give a call to this number, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. That is going to be a really powerful film. In my opinion, of all the films I've ever done, this is simply the most powerful and will impact and touch more people than any other film I've done because it impacts everyone. And it's about poverty. And it's about the new normalcy of criminalizing being poor, the indifference. And you can say, well, that's not true. We're not indifferent. And indeed, you as an individual may not be indifferent. You may be very compassionate and very concerned about poverty. And I commend you for that. But the vast majority of Americans have never protested home foreclosures. Now, we've had over 8 million home foreclosures. Four people per home. You're talking about 30 plus million people. No movement for them. The poverty among college students with their debt. No movement there, including among college students. You would think that they would have already organized and protested to change the bankruptcy laws and also to get their interest forgiven. We're not connected with this, and we should be. So we're going to play you a short clip from the film. And in a moment here, I just want my engineer let me know that he's got it. And while he's queuing up our Poverty Inc., a short clip, let's say hello to Evelyn. Evelyn is one of the individuals who every day this week we're having a person on the program who had an advanced or terminal disease and Orthodox medicine was not able to help them. They underwent a holistic protocols and were guided through those protocols by Luann Panessa using my protocols, and today they're here to tell us their story. I haven't talked with Evelyn, so I'm going to hear when you hear her. She's on the line now. Hi, Evelyn.
Hello. Hi, Gary.
Evelyn, what was your condition originally diagnosed as?
I was diagnosed with uterine dysplasia, and they wanted to do surgery, hysterectomy, to remove my uterus.
And how severe was it? What stage was it?
It was severe.
All right. So it was advanced?
Yes.
Okay. And you did not have the hysterectomy, I'm assuming?
No, I did not. I refused to do it because the gamble was, they were talking about a gamble of getting cancer, and I didn't think that was a good enough reason. So I contacted actually Luann, who does your protocol, and that was in March.
And what is your status today?
Today I have lost 38 pounds. My blood pressure and cholesterol meds have been cut in half, and we're working to eliminate them. When I had started, I couldn't walk 10 minutes without having no breath, and pain. And recently, I walked a 5K. I had arthritis also that has been relieved, and I just feel wonderful with my condition. And I've been checked out, and the condition is subsiding.
Good. So you're on the way to recovery.
Absolutely.
But your overall health is improving.
Yes, and I wanted to just say one more thing, because to give some inspiration, I am 79 years old.
Oh, well, we didn't know that.
I want to say that for the seniors out there.
Okay.
That it's never too late, and, you know, I found that this protocol has absolutely changed my life.
We appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights with us, Evelyn.
And thank you, Gary.
And that's all medically verified. All the records are there.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you, Evelyn.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. Okay. I want to share a few minutes from Poverty Inc. to remind people, those of you who are fortunate and blessed enough to have a family, a support system, a comfortable standard of living, you're not food insecure, you're able to enjoy your life, which you deserve. But remember, there are 250 million Americans who are not in that same position and 100 million who are direly in need of help and 9 million who are living on less than $2 a day in the United States.
Break the workforce, break unions, break the aspirations that workers have for a measure of dignity and the ability to sustain their families.
All of the protections that prevented a predatory corporate and oligarchic class from preying on weaker segments of society, all the constraints were lifted, and the assault began.
Wall Street has very intentionally and creatively created a system that absolutely guarantees that most people will not be able to find a job adequate to put food on the table.
We've had an overthrow in this country, but it happened from Wall Street.
They're bankrupting the country.
Lending each other money which didn't exist, paying each other bonuses from profits which weren't real.
They're looting the U.S. Treasury by printing trillions of dollars in greenbacks.
The free market means you don't go to jail when you pull a ripoff. That's part of the marketplace.
It's almost another world. Some writer called it Richistan. I mean, these corporate overlords make $900,000 an hour.
When the economy went, a lot of things went with it, and a lot of jobs and a lot of other things like that, you know. So when the money stops rolling in, eventually you can't pay bills, and eventually you're on the street, and that's what happens to most families and most people.
In America, more than 90% of the 25 million Americans forced to go to soup kitchens and food pantries aren't homeless. They have homes. They're just too poor to be able to afford all the food their families need. They're a senior citizen who doesn't earn enough from Social Security to pay their rent, to pay their mortgage, and get all the food and prescriptions they need. It's a child. About half the people... hungry in America forced to go to pantries and kitchens or use the food stamps program or children. It's working parents who are working at the minimum wage, a little over $14,000 a year for full-time work, and still can't afford to feed their families.
Food stamps benefit pays about a dollar a meal. It is incredible hypocrisy of the society to make it far harder for working families to get food stamps for themselves and for their children than for corporate leaders to get billions and billions and billions in corporate welfare.
I used to consider myself middle class. There's no middle class anymore. It's rich and poor. That's it. I don't consider myself middle class. I was looking forward to retire, and I was forced to retire at 62.
I rent the room because I can't afford my rent. It was a $1,500 apartment. So I rent the room. By the 15, I have no money to eat. I have to go to a senior center to eat. I never thought that retirement would be this bad, so depressing, you know, in this city. And I don't think people see that, you know. People make a little money, they think, wow, everybody's like that. No. How many seniors out there with pensions and Social Security, they can't even pay for food? I'm barely making it every day.
I'm really embarrassed that I worked since I was 16 years old, and I'm 65, and I'm suffering. What kind of retirement is this? What I expect 5 years from now, where would I be? You know, because we don't know if they're going to deduct Social Security. We don't know if the city decides to cut my pension.
Homelessness is it's a terrible thing. But we've gotten so in this society that it's almost like, well, people are homeless. So what?
What type of person goes to work on Wall Street? I think you'd have to say these are people that are mostly in search of lots of money. And when they start making money, that's when the problems start. This endless pursuit of what they believe is going to fill them up and make them feel good, which is endless supplies of money, but it never does.
Yeah, I think the people who work in these big Wall Street investment houses and banks and so on get a colossal sense of entitlement. Someone once called it narcissistic self-entitlement.
They feel this hollowness, so they go out and buy things to try to fill them up. They buy Ferraris, they buy $2,000 suits, they go out for super expensive dinners.
And that man you just heard from was the Wolf of Wall Street. He lost everything, and I was able to get him in his last interview filmed before the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, Martin Scorsese's film. And he really told the truth, sobering, what he had to say about the culture there, the people there, the thousands upon thousands of people he employed, young people out of Harvard and Yale, greedy, selfish, driven, smart. We need to know more about what motivates the people to make such immoral, unethical decisions. And that's all in Poverty Inc. If you want to join me for this important event, a fundraiser for our station, WBAI in New York, call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. Talking about poverty, sitting in studio with me right now is a gentleman who was on 2 weeks ago. His name is John. Hi, John.
Hey, Gary.
And I just wanted to see what has happened in John's life since he appeared, because it's frequently the case when people hear about someone suffering and their case is made real that there's an assumption someone's going to do something. But then no one does. John, you went to college.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have a family.
No.
So you don't have a support system.
No.
What do you do to try to find work?
Well, there was a time where it was actually fairly easy for me to find work because I am young and I'm far from stupid, at least I think so, you know. But the problem I've had recently is I tried to find work, and the biggest obstacle I come across is even people that are willing to hire me due to my situation, who ignore, you know, the fact that I don't have an address or a phone, ID has become the issue now. I don't remember if I told you this, but the one time I chose to still stay at the Bellevue's men's shelter, when I woke up and my bag was gone, it also included all my identification. And that's been a huge problem for me lately, because some of the people that would be willing to hire me, even for just a day job or whatever, usually require just to look at an ID. Maybe even if they don't make a copy of it, they need it just to verify that I'm not, like, you know.
You're making an effort to get your ID.
Yeah. It turns out to be a real huge headache to get it. You know, it's basically you need ID to get ID. You know, it's hard for
someone.
So you're
in catch 22. I found this in thousands of people in Florida, the ex-vet who had come because it was warmer there. So if you're going to be poor, better be poor where it's warm than poor where it's cold. But they frequently didn't have ID. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they couldn't get anything. They were living in the woods. Also, you've been arrested 3 times for just being poor. You broke no crime. You did not do anything that is criminal. You simply were on the street, freezing, sub-zero, and the police arrest you. You go in for 36 hours, and then they let you out. A judge lets you out because you haven't done anything, but it's still on your record.
Yeah, I'm told, you know, the last time I had a public advocate, she looked at my record and she said, geez, like, anyone with, you know, a brain in their head can look at your record and see that it's all due to homelessness. Like, you've committed no criminal crime. You haven't done anything wrong. It's just your circumstances.
Do you realize how many people are being arrested for committing no crime, but they're simply poor? Debtors' prisons?
I see it all the time, you know.
Yeah, you're 24 years old. You've gone to college. You don't drink. You don't do drugs. I see you sleeping on the street. We helped you.
Yes.
But you need more than that. You need a job. And I want to see what the people in this audience can do to extend themselves. So I'm going to have you stay out there this afternoon and see if we can't get you a place to stay. I know you're applying for places, but that takes time. Sometimes there's a year waiting list.
Yeah.
And the number is 646-926-5422 if you feel you could help John in some way. And John, what do you spend your day doing?
Lately, since I talked to a social worker and we agreed that what I needed to do was get identification, I've been panhandling a lot because after going to the library and looking up everything I need to know about how to get my identification, which is going to require a birth certificate and a social security card and all that stuff, I'm going to have to pay a fee each leg of the way. So for each part of the identification I need, I'm going to have to pay for it. So I've been panhandling and saving every dollar I can for that.
Do you ever communicate with the other homeless people on the street?
Occasionally. A lot of them, not so much because, you know, everyone's got a different story, but some of them are, you know, little nuts. Some of them are, you know, on something.
Are a lot of drug addicts. There are a lot of people who have mental problems who need help. And by the way, do you know that the number one place in America where people with mental problems go are sent is to jails instead of to what we should be doing if we were a humane society? We should have humanistic, holistic mental health facilities for people who are going through times where they need professional help and housing. You do not put a person who has emotional problems, mental problems, into a jail. First of all, they're not going to fit. Secondly, they're going to act out. Thirdly, there's going to be an immediate reaction from the police, as the police recently killed a man. They boiled him to death. They put a hose on him, and to his skin began to melt. Now, you would think that person would be arrested, not in New York. You can do anything to anyone in New York as long as you wear a badge and get away with it, in 90% of the cases, or higher. And we should have humanistic, holistic places, because they're all over the streets, especially on the Upper West Side. So let's see what we can do to help you take the next step in your journey of becoming self-sufficient.
Thank you. I'd really appreciate that.
Okay, John. Thank you. Now let's hear from a segment of what it's like when your only crime is that you cannot pay a private corporation that is making tens of millions of dollars a year off collecting debts and then making you go to jail or have to see a probation officer when all it was a late bill or a bill that you couldn't pay all at once.
Y'all get on this side. We're going to have to push it backwards.
No, we're not.
I'm trying to push it off of my car. Then it's going to be tore up.
Let us get going.
This is an everyday thing.
Yeah, I probably don't have enough gas.
And the starter's gone out of it, so you got to do this every time you want to leave in that car.
And we was just going to the gas station. They pulled us over, and they wrote me a seatbelt ticket, and it came out to be $41. I didn't have no money to pay, so they charged me $10 to put me on JCS probation. And JCS, it's... I don't get why they're in the picture. This is between me and the courts, not another business.
There is an entire industry devoted to making money off of people who can't pay.
Normally, an offender is put on probation to make sure that they're not posing a threat to public safety if they're not going to be put into prison. But we see a lot of courts really just hiring probation companies because they want to hire a debt collector and calling it probation.
Judicial Correction Services is a private company that allegedly provides private probation services. Essentially, they're a collection agency.
Private probation companies don't charge the courts they work for. Instead, they bill the people they supervise directly in fees every month that they're on probation. That's how they make profits. We found widespread abuses plaguing this whole industry, ignoring evidence that people are actually making heroic efforts to pay down their debts.
Is this all the money you got?
All of it.
Being poor has never been a crime in this country.
And yet, we are still throwing people into prison for owing money and not paying it back.
I've heard people going to jail for not paying their fines. That's one thing around here that will get you in jail quick is not paying your probation. They will come get you for that quicker than not paying your child support.
Probation is supposed to be a way to keep people out of prison who don't really belong there. Private probation really turns all of that on its head.
It's essentially a debtor's prison.
Pretty much all of Columbiana's in there.
And just about everybody I know has had to and still are going through it.
Yeah, every time you go to court, it's like a family reunion.
One of the really perverse things is that often the poorest communities are the best markets for them. In a place where people really struggle, people wind up on probation in large numbers and for very long periods of time, and that translates into big money and fees for probation companies.
So when profit becomes the driving force, civil rights get thrown under the bus.
That's just about as far as I can get it from the inside. I have to have help getting it the rest of the way. Columbiana is a very small town. Is just a lot of land and roads, and then like what stores we do have, there's not really that many. I've applied for Fred's, Piggly Wiggly, Target. I would love to have a job, but this is why I'm not broke all the time. JCS adds on $35 every month, even if you're making progress on it or not. It's almost impossible when you or 17 with no income. I live with my mom and my sisters and my two nephews, and my mom is on disability. She pays all of the bills, and if she can give me anything, she will give me a little bit to put towards my ticket, but there's usually not much left.
$40 is very hard to come by. And once you get $40 or something like that around here, usually you put that in gas to get where you need to be.
We're looking at offenders who would not be on probation at all if they had more money. They wind up actually paying more than the person of means over time and is faced with the continual risk of incarceration if they fall behind on their payments.
Here is the actual ticket I got. I paid $10, fees $35, and then fine balance $41. And it shows that it went towards my fees and my fine stayed the same. This one right here shows I paid another $10. Shows that the fees went down, but the fine is still $41. I've told the judge that I had the money to pay for the ticket, and I couldn't afford the rest of the fees, and he said that that wasn't his problem, that I could just put that $41 towards the probation. And then I got another one that shows I paid $41 even, and the fine has not been touched, not one time, all the money I've paid. See, this paper right here, it says a payment is needed. If you fail to appear, a warrant will be issued for your arrest.
A lot of companies in the private probation industry are run by people who are former law enforcement. JCS is run by a man named Robert McMichael, who is a former sheriff and U.S. Marshal. And there's no question that those connections often pave the way to them getting the business that they get.
The system is horribly broken. You can't pay, you're poor.
Just to give you an idea, the young lady who got a $41 fine for not having a seat belt or not wearing a seat belt in the back seat of a car, she has paid over $250 in fees to the private probation officer. And if she can't pay it off each month, it reboots itself to the original amount. And yet she has no money, she has no job. She could pay thousands and thousands of dollars for a $41 fine. And if she doesn't, she can go to jail, and every day she's in jail, she'll be charged for being in jail. And this is happening to millions of Americans, and we're not making this an issue. We should never criminalize being poor, and that's what we've done. More tomorrow. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Just a quick note. Evelyn, the woman that was on today, she forgot to tell you that she just found out she's getting a Lifetime Achievement Award in her field. She works with people with chemical dependence and helps them wean off, and she's been utilizing a lot of the information that you share on the show. I thought that was very significant, you know, as well. And I just want to make mention that it's there are a lot of nurses in your audience, and I know how frustrating it is working in the hospital systems. And I will tell you, it has been an absolute joy to be a part of people's healing processes. I mean, that's why we go into healthcare, to help people with managing their life and their illnesses. And in conventional medicine, we don't. We manage their illness by keeping them ill. And it's so refreshing to hear people that have applied the tools that we give them and see these beautiful results of turning their lives around by taking their health back and taking their personal power back and utilizing it from a place of love and not from a place of fear. So I just wanted to make mention of that. I get emails every day from people who are improving, and of course the people in our health support groups are doing just a beautiful job. We have a
phenomenal,
very dynamic, motivated group.
Absolutely phenomenal. By the way, let me mention that coming up in just 2 weeks, we begin our new brain health support group for anyone who has depression, anxiety, memory loss, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis. And if you have to have medical verification of your condition, because it's a real study, and you can give Luann a call if you'd like more information to participate in it, Luann.
Yes, it's 631-504-6198. Again, it's 631-504-6198. I interview everyone.
Thank you, Luann. Let's now say hello to Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Hi, Gary. Today, we're talking about the battle for Benton Harbor, Michigan, an almost all-black town that Whirlpool Corporation intends to own outright. And Al Sharpton plays a trick on Ferguson as a treat for the Democrats.
Should that surprise you?
Not at all.
Good. Utrece Lead right now.
I fell asleep late last night, and I dreamed the night and almost half the day away. I just got up so that I could hear her say,